It's Wednesday, January 12th, 2022, and this is Markets Daily from CoinDesk. I'm Adam B. Levine here again with Adrian Bluss for your daily news roundup. On today's show, we're talking Bitcoin, fair pay for developers on Web3, the latest headlines, and more. And just a reminder that CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice. The crypto market has surged in the past 24 hours, with BTC gaining $3,000 on the back of a U.S. Federal Reserve commitment to curb the impact of inflation. And all that's happening is a historically reliable blockchain indicator suggests that Bitcoin may be in the final stages of a bearish trend, having lost nearly 40% of its value in the past 2 months. The entity-adjusted dormancy flow, a new metric for us, is the ratio of a cryptocurrency's current market value to the annualized dollar value of coin dormancy, and that's dropped below $250,000. Dormancy refers to the average number of days each coin transacted remains dormant or unmoved, a gauge of the market's spending patterns. When this metric has in the past dropped below $250,000, it's marked major price bottoms. And a word of caution, while the indicators flip bullish again, macro plays can play spoilsport. The U.S. December Consumer Price Index, scheduled for later this morning, may inject volatility into the market. We'll tell you all about what happens there tomorrow. But a higher-than-expected reading of 7.1% may convince traders that even faster tightening of monetary policy conditions will be announced by the U.S. Central Bank. That would, at least in theory, put fresh selling pressure on Bitcoin and other perceived inflation hedges. Taking a look at the broader market, while all major cryptocurrencies saw prices spike higher, current top performers included Phantom, Harmony, Cosmos, and Near, who saw price gains as high as 21% in the last 24 hours. Traders in crypto circles cutely refer to a basket of these tokens as FOAN, or F-O-A-N, which they describe as a set of Layer 1 tokens primed for decentralized finance or DeFi activity, with their cheap and fast networks. And just a couple of quick definitions here. Layer 1 blockchains are platforms such as Bitcoin, Ethereum, Phantom, and Solana, and pretty much everything else we just mentioned there, that operate as full transaction processing networks. That means that they can stand alone, and they also can support products and services built on top of them, which then use their Layer 1 blockchain transaction processing to accomplish whatever they're doing without having to build it themselves. Think about Layer 1s like infrastructure, and higher layers as either additional layers of infrastructure or simply applications which use the Layer 1 systems rather than building their own. And of course, DeFi refers to blockchain-based products that rely on smart contracts instead of third parties to provide financial services to users. Interest in the FOAN or phone coins comes on the back of a nearly 400% rise in Solana, Terra, and Avalanche Layer 1 protocol tokens. That grouping is commonly known as the Solune AVAX trades, at least in recent months. We're talking about the phone trade today since it outperformed all the other major cryptocurrencies, which posted more muted gains. Today's crypto coverage comes courtesy of CoinDesk's markets analysts, Shreya Mawla and Omkar Godbole. Bitcoin is currently trading at $43,931. That's up a little bit over 5% in the last 24 hours, while Ether is trading at $3,371. That's up 8.27% in the same time period, according to the CoinDesk Price Index. In traditional markets, U.S. stock futures were little changed and have data expected to show the largest annual increase in prices, according to official statistics, in four decades. We'll have all the details on that one tomorrow. Futures for the S&P 500 picked up 0.1% on Wednesday, basically flat. That follows a broad market index rise on Tuesday, which snapped a five-day losing streak. Contracts for the tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 added 0.2%, and futures for the Dow Jones Industrial Average edged 0.1% higher. Overseas, the mood is a bit brighter as European and Hong Kong traded technology shares rallied on Wednesday. The regional Stock 600 index gained 0.5 point, with its tech sub-index rising 1%. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng index jumped 2.8% as its tech sub-index achieved its biggest daily gain since October. Today's traditional markets coverage draws from the Wall Street Journal and the FT. Stay tuned. After the break, we'll be back with a few quick headlines we're tracking today, with links to the full articles in the show notes for this episode, as always. Then after the headlines, we'll take a look at how Web3 is finding a fairer way to pay for its developers. We'll be right back.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Taking a look at the headlines and turning to big picture news, Chief U.S. Central Banker Jerome Powell was openly endorsed by Republicans and Democrats on the Senate Banking Committee in a session which nominally focused on how the Fed planned to address inflation running at multi-decade highs, why the central bank misdiagnosed the surge in price increases, and what stricter monetary policy would mean for job growth. The Fed chief said the central bank was determined to ensure that high inflation did not become, quote, entrenched, and that far from diminishing job growth, a turn to higher policy interest rates and a runoff of its asset holdings was necessary to keep the current economic expansion underway. If prices continue spiking, the Fed could be forced to push through a sharper rise in interest rates this year than the 3/4 percentage point hikes its policymakers currently anticipate, risking a return to recession. Reuters has that report. And a little quick editorializing from myself. I've said it on the show before, but the U.S. Central Bank has, over the last dozen or so years, and specifically for the last few years, painted itself into a pretty challenging corner. To keep prices for assets like stocks elevated and costs for the government to borrow money low, they've put their thumb on the scale and increasingly encouraged, even forced markets to diverge from reality. They didn't want markets to go down, even as federal and state policy forced much of the economy closed as part of the unprecedented official response to COVID-19. So they did what was necessary to prevent it. But at what cost? At least one of the major costs is addiction. Markets already were, but have become increasingly addicted to the more than $100 billion of new money being injected into the system on a monthly basis, not even to speak of their cost of borrowing money being artificially low as part of the Fed's move. This phenomenon, further manipulations, and other new money pumped into the system has exacerbated inflation, which has forced the U.S. Central Bank to at least act like they're going to stop. But they can't stop. Not without all the things they've concerned themselves with preventing coming back with a vengeance. So, in my opinion, they won't stop, but they must continue to pretend that they will stop. Let's talk about Bitcoin for a second. Bitcoin, although commonly referred to as an inflation hedge, is actually much more of a hedge against systemic disruption. That's because it's not part of the Federal Reserve or global monetary policy system. In an environment where governments and central bankers engaged in well-reasoned and effective monetary policy, something like Bitcoin isn't interesting. Why would it be? The money that you use every day is doing just fine. But that's not the world that we live in. In this world, we're now many years into an unprecedented form of experimental monetary policy, originating and being conducted from the most systemically important currency in the history of mankind, with all secondary currencies uniformly following that same path. In that world, Bitcoin is very interesting, not because of what it is, but because of what it isn't. Moving on. Air freight forwarders are off to a turbulent start to the new year after flight cancellations have sharply reduced aircraft capacity and disrupted expedited shipping operations. Though cancellations eased over the past few days, airlines have scrubbed thousands of flights in recent weeks because of winter storms and staffing shortages tied to surging COVID-19 cases and related actions. The cancellations have delayed deliveries and added to transportation costs for retailers and manufacturers seeking to fly goods over clogged ocean ports around the world, the Wall Street Journal reports. Turning to international news, the parent company of Brazil's largest crypto exchange has entered the European market with a Portuguese acquisition. 2TM, the holding company for Mercado Bitcoin, acquired Cryptoloja, Portugal's first licensed crypto exchange, as step one in its nominal plan to expand into Europe. CoinDesk's Andreas Angler has that one. Meanwhile, Binance has hired former government officials from Russia and Ukraine to man regional posts. The top crypto exchange recruited an ex-Bank of Russia executive who will head government relations in Russia, and a top official from Ukraine's Agency for Infrastructure Projects who will lead the office there. CoinDesk's Anna Batakova reports. Turning to industry news, Ethereum has reached a staking milestone. The top four staking entities on the Ethereum 2.0 beacon chain now cumulatively account for 47.5% of total deposits, with Lido making a significant jump. However, those 9 million staked ETH really represent 280,000 active validators, providing security, building blocks, and ensuring the health of the network. It's a number that seemingly grows around 1% per week and continues to further decentralize the network as Ethereum fans ready themselves for a transition of some sort to Ethereum 2.0. Meanwhile, cryptocurrency technology is making a splash in the carbon market. In recent months, millions of credits for offsetting greenhouse gas emissions have been virtually tied to newly created cryptocurrency tokens and removed from circulation. Some market participants say the technology is bringing transparency to the unregulated voluntary carbon market and helping create new incentives for projects that benefit the climate. The Wall Street Journal has that one. And in further U.S. central bank news, Chairman Powell says the Fed will release a crypto report within weeks. During his Senate confirmation hearing on Tuesday, the Fed chairman also said a central bank digital currency wouldn't necessarily lead to a ban on private stablecoins. At Tuesday's hearing, Powell was asked by Senator Pat Toomey, a Republican from Pennsylvania and the committee's ranking member, whether a central bank digital currency couldn't coexist with, quote, well-regulated privately issued stablecoins, end quote, if Congress gave the Fed the authority to pursue the digital currency. No, not at all, Powell responded. Toomey also cast doubt on the Fed's authority to act as a retail bank for Americans. Quote, "It seems to me there's absolutely nothing in the history, the experience, the expertise, the capabilities of the Fed that lends the Fed to being a retail bank. Is that a fair observation?" Toomey asked. Powell agreed. "I would say yes," he said. Coinist Cheyenne Ligon has more on that one. And in lighter news, here's our associate producer, Adrian Blust.
Thank you, Adam. Unstoppable Domains launches NFT-based sign-on for Ethereum and Polygon. So-called utility NFTs can also be used to mark positions in DeFi or prove membership in communities, said Unstoppable Chief Matthew Gould. Choosing a unique username in the form of an NFT, such as yourname.crypto, is 100% user-owned, unlike traditional emails and logins, where websites can mine and sell your data. The solution works like Google Sign-In without the snooping and with much more flexibility, Unstoppable Domain CEO Matthew Gould said in an interview. CoinDesk's Ian Allison reports. And one day after launch, OpenSea competitor LooksRare sells over $100 million in NFTs, or non-fungible tokens. After months of speculation about a possible vampire attack, dominant NFT marketplace OpenSea may finally have a worthy and more thoroughly decentralized competitor, LooksRare. According to a Dune Analytics dashboard, in the past 24 hours, the fledgling non-fungible token marketplace has hosted $105 million in trading volume, generating 613 ETH, nearly $2 million, in platform fees to be distributed to Looks, as the token is called, to token stakers in the coming hours, according to a tweet by the co-founder, Zod. CoinDesk's Andrew Thurman has that one.
Thanks very much for that, Adrian. Today's featured story is an opinion piece from CoinDesk's Daniel Kuhn. Our story is entitled, "Not Everyone Can Afford to Be Satoshi." In an open letter reflecting on his invention of the World Wide Web, Tim Berners-Lee first thanked his boss. Quote, "I was very lucky back in 1990 to be allowed some time to sit and code," he writes, before entering into a straightforward account of how HTTP, HTML, and URLs came to be. These three protocols, about 9,555 lines of code written in Objective-C programming language, are the backbone of the web as we know it, the communication tool that has, as Berners-Lee put it, changed everything. Berners-Lee, who is a trained physicist, was working at the European Organization for Nuclear Research, or CERN, in Switzerland at the time. He was paid a salary for his work, even the time spent noodling. But the web, which has made countless people vast fortunes, didn't make Berners-Lee a billionaire. A few months ago, he auctioned off an image of the World Wide Web's source code as an NFT for $5.4 million, one of the few times that Lee has profited directly from the code. Like other general-purpose technologies, from GPS to the internet itself, developed during a particular age of massive government defense and science spending in the back half of the 20th century, the web was essentially gifted to the world as free and open-source software, or FOSS. It's an age that some web developers pined for, and many still put Berners-Lee up as a model for open-source development. Earlier this month, Lori Voss, a co-founder of NPM, a GitHub-acquired company that builds open-source tools, did just that. He was making an argument against the funding model that seems to be predominant in Web3, a buzzword to describe the litany of blockchain-based and non-crypto projects aiming to put user identity and dignity at the center of the internet. Quote, "The whole point of Web3 is supposed to be that it's democratic and decentralized, and everybody benefits from the value they provide to the network. That's a great idea. It's entirely antithetical to a system where early adopters get outsized returns. We already have that," Voss tweeted. In particular, Voss, like many before him, noted the potential conflicts of interest that token-based projects present. Pre-mines, or tokens minted and held in reserve for early investors and project developers, are both incentives to build useful tools that attract users and huge non-cash grants awaiting exit liquidity, which is another way to say that retail token buyers make these things more valuable. It's all part of a larger backlash against Web3, Techlash 3.0, and crypto in general. It's not hard to see how the presence of venture capitalists like Andreessen Horowitz under the brand A16Z and others, which stand to gain a lot by bullying for crypto's adoption, stand counter to the egalitarian roots of crypto. This is all the more evident when Web3 is compared to Bitcoin, the first cryptocurrency developed pseudonymously by Satoshi Nakamoto, who, as far as we know, has never profited from their invention. That was the standard way that cypherpunks and many free and open source software developers operated, in it for the ideas, for the battle for privacy and digital rights. It's a romantic ideal, but doable. Quote, "I like the idea of giving away ideas, and people who can code giving away code. It enables a collaborative approach where many others can work on it and build on it. This has been a strength of Bitcoin. All the work by all the devs is given away freely, and anyone can use the software as they wish," Bruce Fenton, an early Bitcoin adopter and registered broker, said in a text message. 4 years ago this week, Fenton unveiled Ravencoin, a Bitcoin fork with a few modifications for throughput that is now a $1 billion digital asset. Fenton said he's never profited from Ravencoin and is now unaffiliated with the free and open source project. Although Fenton managed to pull a Satoshi, he doesn't necessarily admonish others looking to profit from code. Quote, free and open source software can work with all kinds of models, patronage, partnership, with for-profit enterprise, and even things like sales. But whenever you're paying real money for a token, it's crucial to ask what you're getting for that in return, he said. This is a view I tend to agree with. If coders can manage to stay anonymous and walk away from their proceeds, that only strengthens a project. But free and open source software is an ideal that's hard to reach. Coders code and deserve to get paid for their work. Tools like NFTs or even ICOs can be done fairly without compromising on the founding values of crypto. It's hard, but it's doable. I'll state bluntly that there's absolutely no point to crypto without decentralization. Having a founder that sticks around is an attack vector. Having massive bag holders is unseemly. If a blockchain can be censored, it should be. But projects can, and sometimes do, decentralize over time. Starting from the position that everyone needs to be an ascetic like Satoshi or Berners-Lee puts everyone at a disadvantage. Not everyone is in Berners-Lee's position when he coded the web, an employee of a publicly funded institution building public goods. It's a new age. We have new tools and new funding models, and thanks be. And even Berners-Lee notes the web, quote, is not yet the best it can be, end quote. And that's our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. This episode was edited by Adrian Blust, and you can send us an email at podcast@coindesk.com. We'll be back tomorrow with another news roundup, and thanks for listening.
What's up, everybody? This is Adrian Blust, associate producer of podcasts, with a special announcement that we are excited to share with y'all. This Wednesday, the 12th of January, we are debuting a brand new podcast series titled New Money with Spencer Dinwiddie and Solo Cisse, showcasing how some content creators and entrepreneurs are getting involved in crypto. You'll be able to watch the show on Spotify with their new video podcast feature and listen back on all other podcast platforms. So let's take a peek at the preview to get a taste of what to expect.
What's up, everybody? This is Spencer Dinwiddie.
And I'm Solo Cisse.
And this is New Money, brought to you by CoinDesk.
All I hear, go get the money. So I go get it.
Get it.
Hate means I do something right. So I'ma
let him.
Yeah, I'ma let him, yeah, yeah.
What we'll see is money not only being exchanged for this digital currency, but the frictionless movement across borders. It's going to be able to flow as easy as a text message.
Staying true to yourself, right? Like, you've always been true to yourself.
I just want to share that with everybody. You know, you could be yourself in full capacity.
It's our duty to take our visions and be fearless in our pursuit.
Be my most authentic self and show people that, look, I'm an athlete, and yes, I'm also part of the LGBT community.
My goal is to have, you know, my own NFT, my own entire IP, like my own everything.
Now, how do you think, you know, blockchain and crypto impacts the way you think about it?
Bro, I think everyone has like some sort of like,
sure. So like, how'd you get into Bitcoin?
It's like asking someone if they smoke. It's like, it's like, yo.
Embracing where the world is going. And when the whole world shut down, we saw just how important tech was.
It was more so of my style and the foods that I cooked that kind of pushed me.
I wanted to live the lifestyle of an athlete or an artist while doing what I love.
Having that open mind, having that flexibility, just allows you to be of so much more service to, you know what I'm saying, youth or society in general.
Gamers, you know, maybe it's because you guys just hustle different.
Anything you want to be great at, you got to put hours and hours in every single day.
We are very excited for this show. Join us today, Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern on youtube.com/CoinDesk to watch it live or tune in wherever you consume and listen to podcasts. See you there.